Welcome to Compassion Collective. This episode is brought to you by your hosts, Michaela Swee and Susan Murray, co-founders of Compassion Collective. Music by singer-songwriter Michael Shines.
Hey, Susan.
Hi.
How you doing?
I'm good.
I was thinking just that it's really nice to be sitting across from each other. I mean, on the computer, but sitting virtually across from one another because it's been a while since we've done an episode together.
I know.
So I feel like we're starting 2023 off right. And it feels good. It feels good to be back here again, recording an episode for our listeners.
Yeah, I'm excited.
I am too. So I wanted to give folks a sense of what we're going to be focusing on today and why we're focusing on it. So one of the things that Susan and I have been talking about a little bit more recently, thinking about ways that we can use self-compassion with the explicit intention of thinking about how we show up for ourselves in the strongest, most supportive ways that we can show up for ourselves. And so
in the parts of our life that are really sticky.
Right.
And distressing.
Exactly. During the sticky, distressing moments, which is really, that's when we call on compassion, right? We talk about this a lot, the reminder that compassion, its place is in moments when there's pain present, when there's difficulty present, present challenge. So one of the things that we're going to focus on today is a very explicit skill and tool that we can use to do just that, to think about how we show up for ourselves.
So this tool is called PDA, which is not the kind of PDA that you might be thinking about, public display of affection.
Although it kind of is.
So if that helps you, yeah.
how do we express affection to ourselves?
Yeah, right. But it might be private.
Private displays of affection.
Right. So we first learned about this technique in a compassion-focused therapy experiential retreat that we both attended several years ago. And I think we learned this from Chris Irons. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Mm-hmm. Okay. You have a better memory than I do.
Which, by the way, can I put in a plug? So Chris Irons also is I believe from the UK, works out of the UK, very close colleague of Paul Gilbert, the developer of CFT. I just want to put a plug in for one of Chris Irons' books, which I think is just an excellent one, which is The Compassionate Mind Guide to Working with Difficult Emotions. It's a really, really useful book, which I think actually may even include a bit about the exercise we're going to talk about today.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. So if you want to learn more about this, go in depth and read more, maybe pick up Chris Irons' book. But essentially, PDA is an acronym that stands for, very simple, pre, during, and after. And it's a tool that you can use to plan ahead for a stressful situation that might be coming up and to think about in really concrete ways how you can support yourself before, during, and after that event. Mm-hmm. And other therapies talk about this too. CFT is not unique in this. So DBT talks about coping ahead, or we'll talk about like playing the tape forward. So you think about how a behavior will result in maybe different feelings or other kind of consequences. But what's different about this approach is that there's a specific emphasis on bringing your compassionate self to bear in caring for yourself at each step of the way. So it's not just like problem solving, for example, or even just how to cope through this. It's how to bring self-compassion to each stage. And I want to note too that Michaela and I have been talking about, you know, where each of us need maybe more support at different parts of this, different parts of a stressful situation. And I think that that can vary from person to person. Mm-hmm. Like some folks might have a lot of anticipatory worry or anxiety before an event. And that's where maybe they want to put the most of their emphasis in this exercise. I've found that my anxiety or worry or rumination is sneaky in that I think everything's going to be fine with the situation. And then it kind of like whacks me after the situation and throws me for a loop because I really wasn't anticipating it. So I'm getting to a place finally where I anticipate it and can kind of plan for that after. But regardless of where your challenge comes up the most, it's just useful self-awareness and a way that you can bring self-compassion in this practice to your everyday life to support yourself through these tricky moments that we all have.
Yep, absolutely. And I would say that I get whacked at every stage of the process. Like I'm thinking, I think you and I have talked about this and I can talk about it, you know, in this conversation as well, but I think the pre-stage for me is a big one. I definitely relate to a lot of anticipatory challenges of different sorts when I'm getting ready to gear up and go into any kind of hard situation. I also, though, relate to a lot of what comes up when I'm in a tricky situation. And then mm-hmm. I relate to you as well and thinking about how it can be really hard coming out of a situation. And that's where self-criticism can get really loud and mean, where we can experience a lot of different emotions. So I like thinking about how we can use this pre, during, and after PDA exercise as a way to think about working with different types of emotional experience, right? Like you mentioned mm-hmm. anxiety. This certainly applies when we're talking about anticipatory anxiety, anxiety that's coming up during a tough situation, or anxiety that comes up later in more of a ruminative or post-event process, you know. But we can also think about other things too, like self-criticism, like shame, like any mm-hmm. difficult emotional experience. I think that this really applies. So maybe what we could do is start out by giving a little bit of an example, a concrete example. Yeah. And then one of the goals that Susan and I have for this episode is really to give people a chance to apply this and think for yourselves about something that may be, you know, pending, coming up, looming, and a chance to really apply this for yourself. So this, I think, is a pretty relatable example, thinking about, let's just say the difficulty is an upcoming job interview that you have, right? I think for a lot of people, that would be a high stakes situation, would definitely evoke some fear, anxiety, maybe that very familiar inferiority complex. So when we're thinking about the pre-stage, right, before this job interview, what are some things that you could, that one could do to really help yourself gear up for and get prepared for this stressful event? So one thing you could think about are ways when the anxiety does arise in anticipation of this event, think about ways to tap into that soothing rhythm breathing, right? So thinking about getting back in touch with our breath. One thing I've been thinking about a lot, especially as I've been doing more yoga recently, is just about how easy it is to inhale and how hard it is to exhale. That it's kind mm-hmm. of this natural thing for a lot of us to just take breath in without even thinking about it, right? But it takes a lot of intentional effort to make sure that we're taking our full exhales and letting breath out in a paced way. A lot of us, especially when we're kind of operating in anxious states or stressful situations, it's just sort of like sipping breath in and then holding this just state of holding tension, clenching, right? And not this like letting out the other end of the breath. So maybe something that you think about as you anticipate this interview is really tapping into this soothing, steady rhythm of breath. Maybe you decide, you know what, just for some really good preparation, I'm going to do a couple mock interviews with a friend or a family member who might be willing to, you know, practice being on the other side and, you know, the employer, the boss, and ask me some questions to help me warm up a little bit. The same way an athlete would warm up before, you know, a match or a game, right? Getting your mind ready, your body ready. Maybe you want to think through some possible questions that you would be asked by a potential employer, or questions that you would want to ask, right? To make sure that this is a position or a job that's right for you. And then we want to think about like the during stage of things. So for the during stage of things, we want to think about when we're actually in the situation, what are we going to be doing to be present, to be continuing to show up for ourselves and support ourselves, particularly if like in the going of it, things feel tough, right? So again, this might be an opportunity to focus on keeping breathing steady, steady inhales and exhales rather than holding breath if we're stressed or if we're tense. Maybe paying a lot of attention to our hands, open, willing hands. I know I've talked here on this podcast about my tendency to clench my hands into fists when I'm feeling anxious, right? But really paying attention to open the palms, relax the fingers, maybe paying attention to other muscles in the body that are really tense, neck, shoulders, take a lot of it. So maybe you're clenching in your abs or your butt, right? So paying attention to any muscle groups that are holding a lot, focusing on your posture, focusing on your tone and maybe the way you're relating to the person that you're with, mm-hmm. if it's an interpersonal situation. And then finally, the after is what are you going to do when you're out of the kind of acute imminent situation? What are you going to do afterward to support yourself and show up for yourself? Maybe that's calling someone you trust if you want to process it with someone and get some feedback or just kind of vent a little bit. Maybe it's taking a little time to journal about how it went or how it felt. And maybe it's also about rewarding yourself in some way, just for getting through that. And I think we might think about for each of us, what does a reward kind of look like? Is it just taking some time to relax? Is it doing something we really enjoy, something fun? Is it some other kind of treat? This is an example of like, for example, if the difficulty is an upcoming job interview, how would you want to think about showing up for yourself before, during, and after?
I love that. And I'm also thinking like you might want to visualize it too a little bit, like in getting really concrete and specific when you're planning. Like I'm going to do this breathing exercise to center myself in the car, right? Right before I get to the interview or when I'm in the shower that morning, or so getting really concrete about the where, like when you leave, can you have a plan set up that you're already going to meet someone for lunch? And that will be a really wonderful way to process with them or at least get your mind off of things. But yeah, having all of those kinds of things in your mind ahead of time, I think is useful because when we're stressed, a lot of that goes out the window, those kinds of planning. Faculties.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And also I think sometimes when we're out of a situation that maybe we're worried about or anxious about, sometimes we may kind of like just impulsively think like, I don't need that source of support or I don't need that plan. I don't need to follow through on that. Right. But maybe actually it is helpful to kind of follow through on it and have some time to actually take space to process how something went or how you're feeling. So I think that can be another advantage of setting something up in advance.
Right. And you bring up this great thing of like, what are the beliefs that can get in the way of taking some of these steps of like, I don't really need that. Okay. Maybe you don't need it.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it would also be beneficial and wonderful, right? You don't like have to desperately need something in order to put it in place. And maybe there's some challenging around like, what does it mean to need something and to need or really want the support of a friend or a loved one during a stressful situation? And so I think it's useful too if you start to notice any resistance to engaging in parts of a PDA. And it's not as if you have to follow really any of these suggestions, but if anything comes up for you in terms of like, well, I want to do this independently, or I'm not worthy of this mm-hmm. kind of thing, mm-hmm. This kind of care from someone else for a job interview. Maybe other people wouldn't struggle with this type of thing, right? Like minimizing, downplaying, just something to be really cognizant of and sort of start to question what might be underneath that. Useful.
Yeah.
To kind of gain some self-awareness and see what might get in the way of that. I can definitely relate to feeling like I shouldn't need support for certain things. And so I think the way that I've come to view it is that it's really not actually about need. It's about want. Mm-hmm. And if something is helpful to me, then doesn't mean that I'm deficient or anything like that.
No, not at
all. It means that I'm human.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think sometimes too, I wonder if there's a little bit of like an avoidance that can come into play for folks, like after a situation has already passed of like, okay, out of sight, out of mind, don't need to think about it. Don't need to talk about it anymore. Like it's right. Fine. It went fine. It's over, like done. Right. But actually paying attention maybe to sometimes that inclination we have to avoid or just forget about.
Right.
Forget about something.
Yeah, because if you're mounting such an avoidance response or a sort of minimizing downplaying, that suggests like, that's the Shakespeare quote, me doth protest too much. It's uh-huh. like, is there something underlying that, you know?
Uh-huh. Absolutely.
So again, the first step, as per usual, is to acknowledge that something coming up might be stressful or activating or I don't know, what are some other terms you would use in trying to think about what would be a good activity or situation to choose?
Yeah, something that maybe you can think about, and this could be something that's coming up tomorrow. I mean, it could be something like returning to work, you know, after a weekend off, for example, and dread that may be coming up, or the Sunday scaries,
for example.
Right, doesn't apply here. just, you know, popped into my head, random example. No, you know, it could be something that's coming up next week or next month or in a few months, right? So thinking about anything that is coming up in the near-ish future that is evoking anxiety, dread, worry. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are all related mm-hmm. kind of words and concepts.
Right. I love also the idea of thinking about it could be something that's kind of far off, right? Like a few weeks or a few months out. And so the way that you then would plan to support yourself in the pre-stage is not going to be a one and done type of activity. It might be something that you visit whenever this thought comes into your mind, or you schedule a time every week to cope ahead in some way for that thing. So this can take different shapes depending on sort of the timeline and what the situation is.
And maybe in the type of situation you're talking about, Suze, maybe you're going to need multiple pre-strategies. You know, mm-hmm. like if you've got a lot of time to prepare for this thing that's really on your mind and looming in the future, you know, maybe you need some different tools to come at it, you know, in different moments as you're dealing with this before stage.
Right. And we're going to get into each stage in a moment to talk about, you know, some possible suggestions. But at this point, I would just like listeners to take maybe we'll say 15 seconds to think about an event that is in the near-ish future that causes you some kind of maybe negative emotions, some heart quickening, some maybe urge to avoid or not think about. So just give yourself a few seconds to think about what would be useful to plan ahead for. Okay. Hopefully folks have something in mind. And now let's think about different ways that you can plan to bring your most compassionate self to support yourself as you're preparing for this event. So I'll offer some suggestions. Michaela, jump in. Mm-hmm. One thing I think that can be really valuable is to expect a certain amount of resistance or a certain amount of an urge to avoid even planning for, thinking about, or just to avoid the entire thing altogether. So expecting there to be maybe an urge to cancel the appointment or to reschedule, postpone, right? It's not at all abnormal. That makes a lot of sense. I think we are creatures and species that have evolved to want to avoid pain and discomfort. So that's just hardwired in. And so we don't want to be shocked by that or have that thought really hold too much power over our actions. It's just a thought and an urge, maybe emotional sensation that comes up that we can expect and we can have some understanding and compassion around.
And there may be times when we notice resistance that's present and it feels helpful to gently push back on that a little bit. Like maybe once we've done sort of the noticing of it, right, instead of fighting it away or suppressing it, avoiding it, once we've noticed it, maybe seeing an opportunity to counter it a little bit, right, to speak back to it gently, like taking an opportunity where it feels helpful to say, okay, like I see you resistance. I see you very clearly. And, you know, actually, as convincing as you are trying to be, like I've had these other experiences in my life where I've made it through this kind of thing. And maybe I've made it through quite well, you know, or I've been in this type of situation before and maybe I've come out even stronger or it actually was helpful. This was a helpful experience in some way, right? So I think some folks who, you know, have any knowledge of or experience with like cognitive restructuring strategies, which are something we do a lot in cognitive behavioral therapy and other similar types of therapy, this might be an opportunity to do some of that, right? To not just accept and buy into thoughts as they are, as like, you know, 100% true and real, but rather sort of questioning, like, is this a helpful thought? Is this definitely a true thought? You know, is this a helpful thought or do I want to think about a different kind of thought that may actually be more realistic or more helpful?
Right. Another thing that I find super helpful is to recruit your support system during this time, to kind of let folks in on the fact that you've got something coming up that feels makes you feel a certain way. Maybe you're nervous. Maybe you're apprehensive. You're distressed in some way. There's so many examples. I'm thinking of like if you're waiting for a medical test result to come back, It could be something a little bit like more benign of like you're going on your first date in a long time. Just to like let your people and your team in on what's going on for you. Because maybe you don't have access to a lot of ways to cognitive restructure and maybe they do. Maybe they're right there to say like, hey, remember when you did that this kind of thing a year ago and this is what happened? Or, I'll be there for you on that day. And that even just knowing that puts you at ease. So letting folks in and feeling less alone mm-hmm. in the process.
Mm-hmm. I was also just thinking sometimes a helpful strategy too, I found for me, can sometimes be thinking about like the worst possible case scenario. Like what's the mm-hmm. worst thing that could happen in the situation? Like really spell it out, like answer the question. What is the worst thing that right. could happen here? And then asking the question, like, if that happens, could I deal with that? And mm-hmm. how would I deal with that? Right. Because I think sometimes we just get into this like spinning cycle in our minds about all these like horrible things that could happen. Sometimes we don't even think about them actually happening. We're just in the space of spinning our wheels, thinking like something bad's going to happen. But actually spell it out. Like what could happen? And could you deal with that? If you encountered that feared mm-hmm. scenario, you know, could you deal with it? And how would you deal with it?
Right. It really takes a lot of the power away, I think, from sort of unchecked, ambiguous fears. So that can be really useful. And then in the same vein of doing like a mock interview before a job interview, there are ways that you can prepare for certain situations. that might help to lower the emotional distress associated with the event. So for example, say you're going into a really tricky conversation, maybe it'd be useful to take some time to outline your thoughts. Make sure you have a really clear sense of what are the things that you want to say, what are the points that you want to make, what's your goal for the conversation, your intention. So those kinds of things can help us to just feel more prepared. Do you have any other techniques that you would offer for the pre-stage? And obviously this is not an exhaustive list.
No, I think a lot of the things we're talking about are some of the big ones that come to mind. I think the only other thing I would think about is this question that we've talked about here before, which is like, what do I need right now? And noting that our needs may be different, right? Like, so sometimes the need is going to be some problem solving and some thinking through scenarios, or how am I going to get through this? How am I going to handle it? And then other times it's going to be like, maybe right now I really need to focus on relaxing and soothing my body. And what is that? Mm-hmm. How am I going to do that right now? Or how am I going to try to do that? Maybe what I really need right now is just some connection, interpersonal connection. I need to talk to someone or just do something with someone, go on a walk, or, you know, grab a cup of tea or coffee, or just sit, watch a movie. So I like that idea too, coming back to this question of what do I need and knowing that my needs may change.
Right. And I love the idea of using the PDA to actually practice this other tool of that is really so central to self-compassion, which is attending to oneself and one's needs and how you can respond and meet them. So this is, it's just kind of one mechanism to practice that.
Mm-hmm. So maybe let's try the same strategy that we tried before in taking some time to identify something that feels tough that's coming down the pipeline. And let's take maybe about 30 seconds this time in some silence together, just to give some space to thinking about jotting down some bullet points. Maybe there are things that we just mentioned and we're talking about as helpful pre-strategies, or maybe what we were talking about made you think of some other ideas that would be helpful for you. But let's take about 30 seconds to think about this pre-stage. What would you do to support yourself in this anticipatory phase?
Okay, great. Hopefully you've had some time to think of at least one way that you might be able to support yourself as you're leading up to the event. We're going to shift gears a bit and get into the during of the event. So I don't know about you all, but sometimes when I have a really stressful situation, I kind of like black out during the event.
You're not alone in that.
And so this piece of things, this idea of like, okay, how can I really stay present and support myself in an anxiety provoking or stressful or distressing situation? That's been a real challenge for me, and also has been a real game changer at the same time. So I'm just going to share some things that have worked for me and some things that maybe you might want to try yourself. So one is actually the opposite of blacking out, remaining present in the moment, remaining present to yourself and holding yourself in care, right? And so this can be something that you aim to do continuously throughout a situation, or it might be something that maybe if you're just starting out with this, especially, you might want to think about like having regular check-in points where you really come back to your body, and you can come back to your body with your breath, focusing on your breath. Again, like Michaela said, focusing on both the inhale and the exhale. And thinking about your body in space. So where are the contact points between your body and maybe the chair or the floor underneath you and your feet? Can you put your hands on your thighs or different things to kind of really ground yourself in the moment? Because you certainly cannot know how to support yourself if you're not even in the room, right, mm-hmm. with yourself. Mm-hmm. And so it's hard to be a kind, loving presence to yourself if you're not really present at all. So that's the first step. And then there are some other kind of things that you can try. I think, again, it depends a lot on the situation, but if you are going into a very challenging conversation, whether it's going to be challenging for you or you anticipate it might be challenging for the other person and that feels challenging for you, this is where you might want to set up really clear boundaries at the beginning of the conversation or state your intentions early. Mm-hmm. In an argument maybe that you know, something might become contentious, you might want to plan ahead and even set up with the person the expectation that you might need breaks throughout the conversation to kind of regroup and come back so that you can have the most productive and hopefully healing conversation as you can. That's not always possible, but if it is, I think that that's one way of taking care of yourself. You can even, in a lot of situations, actually have like a warm beverage with you. So maybe this is you're going into just like a work meeting that you have some apprehension around bringing a cup of tea with you that feels like comforting. Bring coffee, something that feels soothing and just cues and signals comfort and warmth and safety to yourself when you're in a situation that is kind of causing maybe your alarm bells to go off in some other ways.
Mm-hmm. That's a great one. I like that one a lot. Holding something warm is often something that feels really grounding for me. I was also just thinking a lot of what we're talking about, I think, has to do with using our senses to help us stay present, right? Mm-hmm. So again, senses of sight, of sound, of smell, of touch, any of our senses. I was even thinking like holding your own hand in your lap. You know how people sometimes kind of put mm-hmm. their hands together and let them rest in their lap. Sometimes that's kind of a helpful feeling of like, oh, okay, my hand is my other hand. Like I'm holding a hand right now in my lap. Or, you know, you mentioned, Susan, having like your hand on your thigh or on your leg. You know, maybe you want to kind of incorporate some movement in your touch, right? Mm-hmm. I'm thinking about, you know, sort of that this is hard to describe without the visual, but using kind of your thumb to gently sort of like rub wherever your hand is. So if like your hand is on your knee, for example, your thigh, see what that's like to sort of use your thumb to gently kind of create this comforting sort of movement and a reminder of like, okay, I've got myself. You know, the same way if you're thinking about how that would look, like if you were giving someone else sort of physical comfort, like rubbing someone's back or sort of holding someone's hand. It's that same kind of gentle motion, but giving that to ourselves. So that's what I was thinking too. Maybe sometimes if you're someone who likes to wear a certain perfume or cologne or there's some smell that you like to have, like either in your clothing or on your body, that kind of can come in whiffs when you're moving or just sitting in a space. And that can sometimes be a reminder of I'm right here. This is what I'm smelling.
Yeah. I'm also thinking a lot of what I've suggested already were like you're on your own, you're alone in a situation, but that's not always necessarily the case, right? Like say you're going for maybe a more mild medical procedure and you want to bring a loved one or your partner in the room and that, you know, is okay for the situation. They can have their hand on your leg or hold your hand or maybe, you're going in to get some medical results or there's some like appointment that you're going, any kind of, it doesn't need to be medical. It could be legal. It could be anything that feels, you know, stressful that you'd like to have a partner there or, and I mean partner in a super liberal term, like someone who's on your team and on your side, with you, and, you know, even just having their presence there without, you know, any show of PDA, any affection, I think can have a profound effect on our nervous system. So thinking of recruiting folks and knowing that that's not, I think some people might feel embarrassed to ask someone to come with them. Maybe they think that reveals something about them in terms of like a vulnerability, but I actually think that a lot of people like to be called on in those situations, to be part of something that's so precious to someone else, to be able to offer that kind of care. And so it's actually, in some ways, it can be a real opportunity for closeness.
And a gift. I mean, I you know, you're giving someone a gift. I think that what you're talking about, Susan, the reason I think people like that, the reason it's a, and it's not like is such a, that's not even the word I'm looking for. A lot of the reason appreciate or it's meaningful, right, is because it's an opportunity for a person to feel needed, right? It's like that's communication of like, you know, you have something to offer me here. Like there's something, you're important. You know, I think we can sort of turn the lens back on ourselves and think about moments where people have asked us for support or to be with them, to accompany them, or to give them something, right? And thinking about those moments where it just it does feel like a gift. It feels like, wow, this person is communicating that something I have to offer them is important, feels really valuable.
Right. And it can, yeah, it can feel like a privilege actually to be a part of that kind of moment with someone that does feel vulnerable.
Yep.
So you're trusted in that way.
Absolutely. And the last thing I was going to say too, and I have said this before and I'll say it again, I think when you're in the situation, also focusing on your sort of muscles and what your muscles are doing. Are you clenching? Are you gripping? You know, are your, again, my hands tend to go into these fists, you know, so are my hands and fists and can I open my hands or just notice what different muscle groups are doing, how they're reacting and responding to the situation that you're in. And if you do notice that there's a place in your body that is grabbing or tensing, seeing just on your next exhale, using that also as a reminder to, okay, am I taking inhales and exhales here? On your next exhale, seeing if you can release that with the breath can be, again, a physically helpful strategy as well.
Right, right. Very calming. Okay, so we're going to take another 30 seconds and ask that folks consider what might be helpful to you during the situation that you have in mind. Okay. And last but not least, really is not least, because for me, this is where
this is most.
This is what really gets me. Because
the after.
So we're going to, yeah, right, the after. We're going to focus on the after. And I say this is what gets me because I, like probably many people, think after you've survived the situation, you've endured the situation, like, ah, relief, you're out of it, right? Like, it's over. No, no, no. It is not necessarily over. In my brain, it, things are just getting heated up.
Yeah, just beginning.
Right, exactly. So I'd like us to focus a bit on how we can support ourselves after the event, this forgotten territory. And I want to note here, we've been talking about stressful events maybe or difficult challenges that might be coming up, which I think brings to mind things that are like kind of categorically negative, right? Like I'm afraid of this, you know, test that's coming up that, I don't know, I actually enjoy taking tests, but I'm kind of a weirdo in that way. But like something that feels like not good, not a great thing, right? You're not going to like Disney World. But it actually doesn't matter what the valence of the thing is, the situation is, whether it's good or bad. It is activating, and it activates a lot of our energy and emotion and our thoughts. And so it could be that you've got a, you know, a wedding that you, your own wedding that's coming up. You better believe there's going to be some post-event processing going on after that, right? Checking back, running through the night. Hopefully it's like really beautiful, joyful memories that you find. But if you have my brain, you're also finding, you know, things that maybe you said that were wrong, or things that, and wrong is not fair to say, but like, you know, you start getting into a self-critical mode
that you would change or wish were different or wish. Yeah.
Right. That's exactly right. So, so let's talk a little bit about how you can support yourself after. One thing I'd like to say, and actually maybe this belongs a bit in the pre category, but relates here too, is that in the same way that Michaela suggested planning for the worst case scenario, I like to do a thing where I plan for what I'd like to do after either scenario, either worst case or best case scenario. So I have a plan in place for either. And so just an example of this is I have actually had some pretty big tests recently that I had to study for weeks on end, and they were very expensive and there's a lot of pressure. And so I had to really think about, all right, like when I get my results back, what am I going to do if I've passed? It's a kind of easy, nice celebration in this circumstance. And what am I going to do if I didn't, if I failed? How am I going to support myself? So I think that that can be useful if you're going into a situation where the outcome is ambiguous, to think through those different ways that you can support yourself afterwards.
I also would add, and this I think is another item that belongs both in the pre and after categories, and maybe the during too, although maybe a little bit less during the during, because you may have fewer cognitive resources available to even do this when you're in the moment. But I think certainly before and after, one of the other questions that we can ask ourselves that can be really helpful is just like, does this make sense?
Does it make sense that I feel this way?
That I feel this way, and that my brain is engaging in this process, that my mind is engaging in this process. Right? Because if we really take time to answer that question, oftentimes the answer is going to be yes. Right? A lot of times we engage in patterns of thinking, patterns of judging, patterns of interpreting. Right? And so if we ask ourselves the question of like, has something like this come up before? And also given sort of what I tend to be sensitive about and what tends to bother me or make me scared or make me worry, like, does this kind of
Or given just the way our brains work, right?
Yeah. It just like is, they look across the board as human beings.
Yeah. They look for danger, look for threat.
Yeah. Right. Right. So on a human scale, on a human level, is this understandable, right? Does this make sense that a human mind would be inclined toward thinking this way or feeling this way? And then also, I think given my personal history, does this make sense?
Right. Yeah. I think that's an immediate space of, you're shifting yourself into a space of compassion and understanding and wisdom and care. Like, of course I'm thinking about this again, right? This is the way my brain works in these situations. Which is another piece, is that I think just the noticing, right? Of like, say after a situation, say your mind is going to a place where it's kind of going over, you know, maybe something someone said, something you said, something you did, something someone, you're just over and over and over in your brain. And so just noticing like, there I go again. That's what my brain does. And can I interrupt that pattern? Can I shift my attention? And I will say this. Sometimes you have to do it multiple times, right? Sometimes it's not as simple of like, oh, notice my brain doing that. Let's shift. Let's bring my mind to a conversation with a friend. Let's let's engage my mind in something so that I don't stay on that train of thought. So it could even just be that you bring your thought to another thing, like I'm going to plan my meals for this week, or I'm going to, you know, whatever it is to kind of take the steering wheel of your brain and just move it over. And you might have to do that a few times, and that is perfectly normal. That just means that it's a really salient situation, an event for you, right? And yep. It makes a lot of sense that you care about that. You're human. Yep.
Absolutely. And I love this four-step process that you've outlined and follow, Susan, and remind yourself, or try to remind yourself to follow this, like notice, interrupt, challenge, let go what doesn't serve you, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's really important to notice, interrupt, challenge, and let go. I like that.
Right. Yeah. I think sometimes, you know, it's easier than others, but I do think with practice, it becomes a lot easier to do. And again, just recognizing that that's really a signal of being human and of caring about something. And that is actually a very beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't mean it should take over, you know, your whole evening or anything like that. But maybe the motivation underneath it, you don't have to be as harsh towards to criticize or anything like that. It's actually very human and natural. Another thing worth doing for stressful events is to plan ahead of time, to have a plan after the event, right? Mm-hmm. Like directly after. So maybe you don't even enter into this post-event processing at the same kind of intensity. And so this could be a situation where you're planning to meet up with someone because you want to, you know, process and vent, go over it. You want to share something that, you know, is going on in your life that's important to you with someone that you care about. Or you can have the explicit intention of like, I don't want to talk about this at all. I would like us to do something where we're not at all focused on what just happened so that I can kind of have like a palate cleanser for my brain. That's perfectly fine. But it's important to have the plan set ahead of time if you can, because it's trickier sometimes afterwards when your brain gets into this mode, maybe, that's reflective to think, okay, I gotta call a friend. I gotta make a plan. So again, just like thinking about where your cognitive resources are going to be, easier to plan and have this, set up ahead of time.
I love those strategies. So let's, again, for a third time, let's take a moment with this phase of things to take just 30 seconds together to think about anything that you feel inspired by that could be helpful for you, similar to things we've talked about, or maybe different things that you're thinking could be helpful to you after a challenging situation has passed.
Okay. So at this point, we hope that, well, really, I hope that you have no stressful situations coming up. That is what I hope most, but because I think that's pretty unlikely for most of us, I hope that this has been a useful opportunity to brainstorm ways that you can support yourself at each of these stages. If you are at a place of feeling a little bit stuck with this exercise, feeling like, I don't know actually how best to support myself. Like maybe your suggestions were great, but they don't really fit for me or for this situation. That's okay. I would encourage you to try to think about a friend or a loved one who is going to be in the situation that you have coming up. Sometimes just having a little bit of distance can open up our creativity and thinking about how we might support a loved one going through that exact same thing. So just spend some time envisioning that, thinking about how you would show up, maybe thinking about how you've shown up for folks in the past that you've cared about. Because a lot of us have this intuitive wisdom in us of how to care for other people. And has to be a little bit more intentional when we think about bringing it towards ourselves. So it can be a useful exercise if you're feeling a little bit stuck with this of how you would support yourself to think about, how would I support someone else?
Yeah. And can I also add, there are a couple different ways to do this. You could think about a difficult situation that is sort of looming in the near future for you and think about, if there was someone I cared about in my shoes who had this, you know, coming up, what would I suggest for them? What would be some of the things that would come to mind for this pre, during, and after? The other thing that you could do is just think about, try and think about a friend or a loved one who at some point in the past shared with you a difficult situation that they did in fact go through or experience, right? And see if you could think, like, going into that, what would you share with them? What would you talk them through in terms of the pre, during, and after? So slightly different iterations of, I think, a similar kind of exercise. But it's a warm-up, right? It's like getting our systems warmed up to be thinking and setting compassionate intentions, engaging compassionately.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think we often will say whatever flow of compassion comes easiest to you, if it means, you know, if compassion towards others feels easier, then start with the exercise that way. Get familiar with how that looks and feels to you. And then that's when you start to think about bringing it back towards yourself. But if it is possible for you to come up with some solutions or some ways of supporting yourself off the bat, then that's fantastic. And I would encourage folks to practice, to really put this into practice and to see how it changes the whole experience. And again, allowing for there to be some experimentation. Some things might work on some days and not others. So just kind of playing around with what works for you with this situation.
So as always, please, we are always wanting people's feedback and to hear about people's experiences with these different types of exercises and different ways of relating to ourselves, to our environments, to what comes up in our lives. So please feel free to connect and share, and we'll see everyone next time.
Thank you for listening to Compassion Collective. You can visit us on the web at compassion-collective.com. Please also consider donating to our Patreon fund at patreon.com/compassioncollective. We'll see you next time.